Savannah has had far less violence than any other major town.
You're right.
Why do you think that is?
Well, because the white community became interested in what we were doing. That, like I said, everybody in the community was not bad. See, Savannah is made up largely of, you have a strong Jewish community here, you have a Greek community, you know, then you have the Catholic community, or you're just, European whites that are here. And I think all of that, because we did have some friends in the white community, it made it easier than what other communities had. And Savannah was a very, you know, wanted some progress too. And the leadership under Mayor McLean, I think, played a part in it also.
Right. And also, would you say the black leadership?
Oh, well.
Preventing any outbursts of violence?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, that's why I say we were trained.
Right.
I mean, when I tell you an intense training, it was continuous training that we had, that, you know, and we believed in what we were doing. So.
Right. And did you find that with each year numbers grew or decreased?
Grew.
They grew.
Grew. That's why I said we have the largest youth council in the southeastern region. It grew. We became the leaders of the southeastern region. And then on the national level, I mean, we were young people and we were handling all of the youth activities for the national organization.
Really?
That's just how intense our training and the recognition that we received.
So Savannah was a real leading center.
Leading force. From this community, James Brown left and he became the national youth director.
Right.
He's now deceased. Bobby Hill. They sent Bobby Hill to law school. Bobby Hill returned to Savannah. He became the first black to go to the Georgia legislature.
Right.
Moved him back into Savannah. He was, during the time in and out of law school, he was working. He was my boss during the civil rights movement with the task force. He was in charge of us. Okay, but Bobby now is not from Savannah. He was a student at Savannah State College when he got involved. He's from Athens, Georgia. Okay, then you have people like Carolyn Quillen, the first person arrested here in Savannah, who is still with the organization. She works, she does voter registration. She's regional director for voter registration for NAACP. She has been a youth field director. She has been the state director for North Carolina for NAACP. So you have those kinds of leadership, and like I said, people, even those that attended Savannah State College, you know, they kind of migrated to us and they became some of the leaders also.
Mm. Right. So, you went away to Florida. When did you come back from there?
Well, I left Florida and went to Alabama.
Right.
NAACP won a suit. NAACP in the 50s was put out of the state of Alabama, okay. So we won a lawsuit to move back into the state of Alabama. So we were assigned, my girlfriend Carolyn and I were assigned to go in and to reorganize youth councils and college chapters.
Right.
We were under the guidance of Mrs. Ruby Hurley, who was a regional director of NAACP, who was my play mother. Now, I called her, she was like a mother to us. She taught us a whole lot. I can give you some examples of what she used to do with us. We were living in Birmingham, and we moved about the state, reorganizing youth councils and college chapters. I'm proud to say that I was able to reorganize back then the youth council, the college chapter at Tuskegee University. There was a Dr. C.G. Gomillion that was a part of, you know, and he was very he was my contact. There, in Montgomery, Alabama, we organized youth council chapters, and also in Birmingham, Alabama. And during that time, in Birmingham, the SELC people were very strong. They were very strong in Alabama, period. And we were congregated at the old A.G. Gadsden Motel, and that's where we kind of got together. You had the SELC people and the NAACP people. But there was a difference. You could tell the difference. SELC people wore jeans and the bib jeans and stuff like that. We weren't allowed to do that. We weren't even allowed to demonstrate in pants back then. I'll never forget once we went, Carolyn and I went to wash the car because we were going to drive to Montgomery, Alabama with my play mother, Ruby Hurley, our play mother, Ruby Hurley. And we went to wash the car And we would then we instead we had on our pants to do that, of course. And then we went up to the office, the NAACP office, and our play mother was there. And she said, oh, no, you're not going with me like that. And we knew that we weren't going to go like that. I mean, we were young people wearing suits and dresses and stuff. And it carried on, but it helped because they never talked about our people. You know, they always said they were well-dressed wherever we went.
Right.
And we had to set examples for the other young people.
And when did you come back to Savannah?
I came back to Savannah in 1965.
Right.
And returned to college.
Right.
But during that time now, when I was living in Alabama, we were also working in Mississippi.
So that was Savannah State College, was it?
Oh, yes. Definitely so. Savannah State College.
Right. And that was the sort of the center for student activity, was it? Was that where
No. We had students that became a part of the youth council that were students at Savannah State College. Now, back then, a lot of Savannah students were there. But no, the center of it would have been the NAACP Youth
right.
Council.
But most of the students
came from the high school.
Right.
From the high schools.
Now, in the newspapers and so forth, there are lots of records of young people being arrested for playing baseball in Forsyth Park.
We couldn't go through the park.
Now, would they all be NAACP organized, or
yes.
would there sometimes just be events where...
The majority of them would be NAACP
so they're all
organized in the parks, yes. They're like, I forgot about that. Yes, but you could not go into the... You could walk through the parks.
Right.
But you could not play in the parks.
And did you have a bus boycott here as well?
Yes, we did.
Right.
We did not ride bus. People walked to work, or they drove to work, or there were carpools.
Right.
To take people to work.
And was that effective as
Very effective as a result of that. I would say that roughly 80% now the drivers are black.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Of course, you can sit anywhere you want to, too.
So how did the bonds work for getting you out of jail?
Oh, they worked well. After the civil rights movement was over, we weren't going anywhere. They wanted to be reached. I don't think any of us were ever charged. I think all of the charges were dropped.
Right. It was just to get you out of the
just
way.
To get us out of
perhaps
yeah.
to frighten you.
Frighten us. We didn't do anything but go back again.
Right. To feed you some of the
Yeah. No, well, that, you know, and a lot of people didn't get arrested over and over again. Some did, but we moved on from one thing to the other. There were so many young people. When we started demonstrating, you start small. But there were so many people that got involved in the movement. Not only was the young people, the adults got involved.
Right. So the students encouraged the adults to get involved.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think the encouragement was there already.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Now, unfortunately, a lot of civil rights history concentrates on the male leaders.
Mm-hmm.
What role would you say the women played? Would it be
a very important role?
Right.
Because you had people like Esther Garrison.
Right.
I would say that the movement here in Savannah was about equally split.
Right.
I would not say it was a male role. I would say because you had Mercedes was one of the most outspoken persons here, and Esther Garrison. Yeah, I would say that the leadership and Mrs. L. Scott Stell, the leadership here, everyone took their leadership from Wesley Law. Okay.
Right.
But I would say that the leadership here was about half and half.
Even the leadership?
Yeah.
And the speaking?
The speaking also. Yeah, oh yeah, now we could talk.
Yeah.
I would say it about half and half.
And the role of songs, very important.
Songs play a very important role in the civil rights movement because that's how we kept the young people motivated. That's how we were waiting for the young people, for all of us to get out of jail. We would just sit and sing civil rights songs.
And they would be old spirituals or new songs?
They were spirituals, and some of the wording may have been changed to civil rights songs. You know,
right.
Like I said, We Shall Overcome is really a spiritual. I know all the civil rights songs. Let me see. Oh, I can't. Just because I want to give you some of them, I can't now.
Right.
They won't come to my head.
Right.
Okay.
But did they often refer back to, like you're saying, the history of blacks?
Definitely.
You had a real
so.
Sense of your past.
Oh, yes. Like Steal Away. You know, when Steal Away to Jesus was written, you know, it was a slave song. And it was a song that was written to tell people to steal away to freedom.
Can you remember how any of it went?
Yes. Steal away, let me see. what we sing a little bit for
you? You can sing, yeah.
Just a little bit. I can't sing. I don't sing. Let me see.
Don't worry.
Steal away to Jesus. Steal away home. I ain't got long to stay here. So you listen. Steal away. You don't have a long time. Move.
And that encouraged you all together.
Oh, those things, yes, those kinds of songs. Right. Yes.
That's great. Now, you came back in 65, and a lot of the counties had been desegregated.
Yes.
The buses, the shops.
Mm-hmm. But that's when we started an all-out voter registration. We continued the voter registration area, too.
Right.
That's when we really worked hard to get blacks on the books. To register and also to vote. I was in college at the time. I was still on payroll of NAACP to work weekends and stuff like that. And they, you know, but that was an incentive for me. And during that time, I also got married. Yes. Yes, I did. And I had a son in 66. But after having my child, I went back to college to finish. So, and I didn't stop.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did a lot of the sit-downs and the boycott, did they wind down after 65?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to ensure that the law was enforced?
Oh, yes, we definitely did that. And remember now, even though Savannah opened up, other areas would not abide by the Civil Rights Act.
Right.
So the fight continued, but it continued with chapters, the NAACP chapters in other cities and
right.
communities and what
happened. So Savannah had a swifter desegregation.
Well, I would say so, but see, Savannah was a leader. What happened in Savannah, you know, let me give you an example. Like in the governor's race,
mm-hmm.
whenever we made our endorsement in the first congressional district, then everybody followed suit. They just waited on Savannah. That's how much control NAACP had in this area.
Right. And did you ever meet jointly with Athens or Augusta, Atlanta?
Well, in our state conferences.
Right.
To share. And, there's a state organization of NAACP. And then in the regional, then we moved to the region, the fifth region, yes.
Right.
So we shared.
So what about the achievements of the 60s?
Well, equal job opportunities, I would say. The right to vote. We became more politically astute, more politically involved.
Is that still true today?
Oh, I think so. We were able to make political gains. We're in the latter part of the 60s. And then we became so involved until we started blacks running for public office.
Mm.
And back then, see, we were so politically involved. Back then, people voted for all seats at large. And we got into the fight of districts. So, you know, they had to go back and draw the districts so that we would have equal representation. And NAACP was very instrumental in that, as well as the Political Advisory Council.
Right. And what other changes do you see?
Well, we got more people involved in local positions, like your aldermen, city government, your county commissioners. Not only that, we blacks were appointed to every major board in Chatham County.
Right.
And NAACP was responsible for that. They would come and say, tell us who we need to put on these boards, you know, or who would you like to see on these boards. And Mr. Law was the kind of person, let me tell you about Mr. Law.
Yes, tell me.
Mr. Law was very forceful. And the white community, some people went after him. You know, they wanted to get him fired from his job. Well, he was fired, but we got the job back. But he was fired from his job because he was with the postal system. But one thing that I appreciated about Mr. Law was that he never served on any appointed board because he was out here fighting to tell you, this board is not doing anything, and he stood up. And that was the kind, I guess that's why, to me, he's a mentor as well as Gene Gasson. They were not afraid to speak up. you know, Mr. Lara just spoke up. And people knew when he spoke, he meant what he said. And so the black community always stood behind him. And not only that, the white community may not liked him, but they respected him. So therefore, he became the person that they would come to. He and Jean Gaston and Mercedes Wright, you know, became people that, you know, they wanted to talk to get advice. What are the needs of the black community?
Right. Now, a lot has been recorded about things like the White Citizens Council and the Ku Klux Klan. Did they have any effect at all?
Well, yeah, they had the White Citizens Council, but it didn't stop us, the Ku Klux Klan. It didn't stop us. We just had to be a little bit more careful and organize ourselves a little bit more as far as demonstrating what have you. But the fear was not there.
Right.
It was not there.
They were
that, it just motivated us.
Encouraged you more than...
Yeah.
And you never came into contact with them in person? Or?
Let me see. The White Citizens Council, yes. In other areas, we came in contact with the robe-wearing Ku Klux Klan. I'll tell you when I went to Mississippi once. I was working out of Birmingham, and we were going over to Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Bishop Spotswood, who was the chairman of the National Board of NAACP, was speaking there. And Carolyn and I were going to drive over that day, that night. And they called us and said not to drive. The office, the main office within the national office in Jackson, Mississippi. See, they had set up a mini office there. Called us and said, "Don't drive." They had just killed this minister on Lynch Street in Jackson. So we had to fly in that night. And we flew into Jackson, Mississippi, where we gave them our plans, but the phones were tapped. So I'm sure you've heard of the Night Riders in Mississippi. The Night Riders followed us all the way in from the airport in Jackson to the NAACP office. Yeah. And we were afraid, I guess. You know, I look back on what we did back then, and I wonder why. I wonder why I wasn't afraid. I guess it was our belief, because here we were we were in our 20s then, when we went to live in Birmingham, and Carolyn and I drove from here to Atlanta, because they didn't want us to drive directly to Birmingham. Spent the night in Atlanta, and we drove on over to Birmingham by ourselves. And I look back at,
on reflection, it's crazy.
You see, we were crazy, or what was it? But no, it was what we believed in.
And what about the situation now in Savannah today?
We have made a lot of progress here in Savannah.
Still further to go?
A lot further.
What sort of areas?
Well, employment. Right. The things have shifted. We need more blacks hired in managerial positions.
Right.
The turnover in City Hall has been tremendous. The mayor that we've had for 21 years has done a tremendous job with his administration in seeing that blacks are in management positions and that blacks are hired throughout the city. More can be done.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully he'll go back in.
Yeah, right.
We're working towards that effort. But I think that industry has to do more as far as management.
And what about racism itself? Do you think that's dying away or still here?
Racism will always be allowed wherever you go.
Right.
But I don't think it is. I think we have a good city. I think that race relations here are better than it has been, than it is in a whole lot of other communities.
Right.
Because you do have blacks and whites working together.
Right. What was I going to say? Yes. Looking over the whole civil rights period, from everything we've talked about today, do you have any regrets, or would you have done the same again, or what would you have liked to have perhaps?
I would do the same thing again, yes. But you know, as I look at integration today, and I look at the kind of education I received under a segregated system, where the teachers had to be innovative and what have you, I don't see that in the public school system now with integration. And I don't know, I question it, whether integration as far as public school has hurt or helped us.
Right.
Because our teachers back then were dedicated, and they made you learn. If you didn't want to learn, they made you learn.
And has Black history disappeared from the curriculum compared to before?
It's not as, well, you see, Black history wasn't taught in the schools that much.
Really?
Yeah, teachers just took it upon themselves. It's not in the history book.
Right.
So they took it upon themselves to do it. And of course, like I said, Wesley Law reinforced it. I mean, it was like school, regular training session. You know, I can tell you about Savannah. You know, I can tell you about the cobblestones down on River Street and how slaves laid that.
Right.
You know, I can tell you all of that. I didn't get that from the public school system. I got that from Wesley Law.
Right.
You know, he taught me this. Tell me about, have you been to the Scarborough House, the old West Broad Street School?
Not yet.
Okay. He told me about there was a slave path up under the building. You know, I didn't get that in the school. But now, you know, you don't get it. I had the opportunity a couple of months ago of going over to my old alma mater, Beach High School, to talk to people about the same thing that I'm telling you about. The young people are amazed. They couldn't imagine that the conditions were that like that. You
so
know?
You think maybe young people today don't realize what was going on before?
No.
And, you think that's
and they don't know the struggle.
Even the civil rights struggle?
They don't know the civil rights struggle.
Right.
No.
So we've talked about all the positive things that came out of the movement. Do you think because of the Black community asserting itself, were there any negative results today? Do you think it's maybe alienated some of the whites, or do you think it's been mostly positive?
Well, I think it has been positive.
Right.
I really think it's been positive. I think Savannah has grown as far as the community coming together as one. But as I said earlier, there are still prejudices. And there is a long way to go.
And just to bring us right up to date, what are you doing now?
Right now, well, I completed my education at Savannah State College. I have a bachelor's degree in sociology. I have a master's degree in political science education. I've done extensive study in counseling education. And I'm working at Savannah State College. I'm director of Alumni Affairs, and I also coordinate the Elder Hospital Program.
Right.
Now that is what I'm doing at the college, but I'm also very much involved in the political community here. We just got out of the mayor's race, and I was one of the coordinators of the Black community for Mayor Rezakis in getting out the vote.
And was most of the Black vote for Mayor Rezakis?
Yes, definitely so.
Which made the difference,
that's right. Now we have to wait until the general election when he's up against the Republican competition. But I'm also one of the vice chairs of the Democratic Party. I serve on the Chatham County Hospital Authority. I'm also a member of the United States Selective Service Board.
And are you still involved with the NAACP?
Not as much as I have been, no.
Do they still play an important role here?
Yes, definitely. So there will always be a role for NAACP.
Right. Well, are there any things maybe we've missed out, or?
I don't know. I think we have talked about it. I think that I don't know what you're going to do with your book.
Eventually, yes.
Okay, but I hopefully will tell the Savannah story. But there are a lot of people that I can think of, like Mr. Holmes, you know, Mr. Henry Holmes, that was very instrumental. Bishop A.J. Scott.
Yeah.
Some of them have passed on, but there are a lot of people that were very helpful to us when we were young in the community.
And you think there's a real need for the civil rights history to be...
There is a need for the story to be told. And there are a lot of people that, you know, could tell you things that I'm sure I've left out.